a quick reminder that this podcast will be containing detailed plot spoilers and heavy-duty language. Listener discretion is advised.
The evil, hate-filled Cthulhu from a dimension far away, flying through gates of madness and into your heart.
Yeah, all you!
Turning dreams into nightmares.
Lick my
destroying
butt.
All he sees.
Now begins a new adventure for me.
You and the Dark One Cthulhu, sharing adventures and smiles. It's a magical bond two pals can share. Soon the whole world will be made aware of you and the Death Lord Cthulhu, making the world a better place. Together you will have so much fun,
sending all my stupid friends to oblivion.
You and the Dark One Cthulhu.
Hunnic March Madness continues, and this may be a long podcast, a short podcast, it may drive you insane, but I needed to talk about probably one of the most inventive creatures ever, given to us by H.P. Lovecraft. I'm talking about Cthulhu, or sometimes Cthulhu, or you say Cthulhu, and I'll say, well, we'll call the whole thing off. Hunnic AFcast here. And again, I want to thank you, the listeners. We're coming close to the 1,000th download. And if you want to talk about bizarre creatures, wait until you see what I have planned. But I will give you, the listeners, a heads up. On March 31st of this year, one of my listeners, as well as an editor on the Facebook page, Albert, it was his birthday a few days ago, and I asked him, what podcast topic would you like to talk and, you know, come back on the show, of course. You name it, we'll do it. And didn't miss a beat, knew about Hunnic March Madness, wanted to discuss From Beyond. Now, I have not read that H.P. Lovecraft story. I will, just like with Reanimator. But probably the short story will be discussed, I'm sure, not in the too distant future, but the movie will be discussed on March 31st, and it will be a live event. If you're interested in participating, you can find us on Skype, Spamboy77, or you can join on the Facebook discussion at Hunnic Outcasts. But that should be a memorable event. It is directed by Stu Gordon, who directed Reanimator, and it does have Jeffrey Combs in it, and I believe David Gale, pretty much most of the actors from Reanimator, so it should be interesting. So that's the 31st. In the meantime, I have recorded and uploaded the Reanimator podcast. I think I'm going to be recording it, though. I'm not too happy with it. I was having some problems with the computer, so most likely that will be a podcast episode that probably will be taken down and fixing that up. I was just having some virus issues and some technical issues that night. It's a 50-50 chance that I will be returning, you know, taking that down and adding some things and fixing the audio and whatnot for the Reanimator discussion. But now, on to Cthulhu. Interesting character. Part man, part dragon, and part octopus. Created, of course, by Lovecraft, and he was first introduced in the Call of Cthulhu in magazine Weird Tales in 1928. Since then, the character has shown up in several different variations. I do remember him being part of a real Ghostbusters cartoon called The Collect Call of Cthulhu, where it was pretty cut and dry. There was a cult that were trying to bring Cthulhu back. They did talk about the Necronomicon. However, Cthulhu was defeated by using electricity. Now, he is part dragon, part human, part octopus. He does live in the sea. I guess it's true, water and electricity do not mix, but this is no ordinary deity. And not to mention the fact, one of his many powers is that if you stare into his eyes, you will be driven stark raving mad. So I do like the fact he was part of the real Ghostbusters cartoon. I love the fact that they went toe-to-toe, but I kind of felt it should have been like a 2 or 3 part episode, or even like the real Ghostbusters animated movie, or the plot for Ghostbusters 2 or 3. That would have been more awesome. The Cthulhu character, deity, let's just call him deity, I think that gives it more respect. And around the Beltway was also, we did see some octopus creatures in Hellboy. It would have been interesting to see, you know, Hellboy go one-on-one with Cthulhu. As for something, the Reanimator movie, I think he's mentioned, and there's some sort of creature in the back, you know, like a drawing of Cthulhu somewhere in Reanimator, but we never really see Reanimator, I'm just saying. There's also a Cthulhu movie that I believe was on Sci-Fi many, many years ago. It came out in 2007, I have not seen it, and apparently it has a fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes. No, never saw the 2007 Cthulhu movie. Guessing from Beyond, apparently he has an appearance in that as well. There have been many games. I do know that there is a app for iOS called Cthulhu Saves the World. It's kind of a role-playing game. There's also a Call of Cthulhu strategy game that's out for iOS and Android and PC, which is pretty interesting. But I guess let's go into a quick history lesson with Cthulhu. He is supposed to be a combination of an intergalactic, interdimensional, is hibernating in the South Pacific Ocean, which is called, it's an underwater city. I want to make sure I pronounce it Rilila. It's a fictional lost city, of course. And to quote from Lovecraft's The Call of Cthulhu, the nightmare corpse city of Rilila was built in measureless eons behind history by the vast, loathsome shapes that seeped down from the dark stars. There lay great Cthulhu and his hordes hidden in a Greek slimy vault. Rilila is characterized by bizarre architecture liking to Euclidean geometry. Norwegian sailor Gustav Johnson, I want to make sure I get all these names right, the narrator of one of the tales in the short story, describes the accidental discovery of the city, a coastline of mingled mud, ooze, and weedy Cilopatilian manisery, which can be nothing less than a tangible substance of Earth's supreme terror. The nightmare corpse city, Rilila, loathsomely relent of spheres and dimensions apart from ours. The short story also asserts the premise that while currently trapped in Rilila, Cthulhu will eventually return with worshippers, often repeating the phrase. God, I'm sorry. I want to respect this. I just want to make sure I'm pronouncing it. Fanugul Megfanafa Cthulhu Rilila Waknikfa Fagatan. In his house at Rilila, dead Cthulhu waits dreaming. Lovecraft claims Rilila is located at 47 degrees, 9 degrees south, 126 degrees, 40 degrees west in the South Pacific Ocean. Writer August Derleth, a contemporary correspondent of Lovecraft and co-creator of the Cthulhu mythos, placed Rilila at 49 degrees, 51 south, 128 degrees, 34 west. The latter coordinates place of a city approximately 51,000 nautical miles, 9,400 kilometers, from the actual island of Panopi, the location of the fictional Panopi scripture. Both locations are close to the Pacific pole of inaccessibility, 48 degrees, 52, 6 south, 123 degrees, 23.6 west. A point in the ocean farthest from any landmass. Well, that would make sense. So that's where he supposedly lays. Or lies. Now, there is a children's book, per se, that was created, deviant artist, Dr. Faustu Ayu, called The Call of Cthulhu, and it's on the interweb, and it's a Dr. Seuss telling of the deity, and on the cover he kind of looks like Horton, you know, made to look like Cthulhu, if that makes any sense. And it probably, if you see this picture, it's awesome. And I'm just going to read the book right now because I came across this and I figured this would be great. And it has a Dr. Seuss human. His eyes are closed and he's wearing 1920s clothes. And it's the most merciful thing in the world is, I think, that the mind isn't able to know and to link our relevance to the wide universe and the cosmic truth for which, by worse, Theophysis recounts strange philosophy I thought until the truth was revealed to me in the winter of late 26. Things began when my uncle George Angle met a nautical man. Now, the nautical man looks a little bit like the Grinch, but he's colored gray and he's got a hook for a hand and he's got the, like, a Cat in the Hat shirt where it's red and white stripes and there's a sign pointing to the docks. And then on the page we kind of see again, like, a Dr. Seuss human wearing, like, yellow raincoat, and he's got the typical old man Dr. Seuss beard. Later that day, he farewelled his life as a doctor's prognosis was tempered with strife. When they could not explain where death had its start, eventually they blamed it on his heart. And, of course, we see the man clutching his heart as he's had a heart attack. Going through my late uncle's papers one day, I found a strange bas-relief made out of clay, with a strange-looking figure carved out above, strange hieroglyphics I could not conceive of. Now, of course, with this illustration, another Dr. Seuss human, hair laid back, and he holds up like a Dr. Seuss clay molding of Cthulhu, as well as some ancient writing. There's a giant red question mark above the man's head. Peace had been made by the sculptor Wilcox, who had sat the thing on cyclopean blocks. On the night when dreams turned to horror and pain, in the restless sleep of the weird and insane. And then, of course, we get this great illustration where, you know, the man is sleeping, and above him is like a Dr. Seuss Cthulhu head. You know, Wilcox's bed has the giant W on it. Then we see Wilcox again, and he sits up in his bed, and, you know, both his pupils are going to the upper left, and his mouth is agape. In the month of March 25th, it occurred, almost as other ills of which you might have heard, Wilcox asked Professor Angle to explain the visions of Rilla assaulting his brain. And then, of course, we see Wilcox talking to Cthulhu and... Wilcox talking to the professor, and the professor's holding up a pamphlet with the Cthulhu cult. Recalling the past, his research to begin, when he heard the phrase Cthulhu Flatang, he kept the records of unsettling Telemut inside of a file marked with Cthulhu cult. So Angle asked Wilcox to record his dreams, and all throughout March he then did that, it seems. But he fell unconscious from March 23rd till April 2nd. Then no more was offered. And we see Wilcox like this, again, it's a Dr. Seuss human. Wilcox, his eyelids have kind of like folded, and we kind of see like, I guess, the Truffalo tree from The Lorax, and we see that Wilcox is starting to slip into madness. And then we see the narrator again, and he's shrugging his shoulders, eyes closed, and I reason that Wilcox's hoax was exposed, and thus it appears that the strange case could be closed. I believe Angel's research met upon an impasse I had yet read of Inspector LaGrasse. So I guess the narrator doesn't believe anything that the uncle Wilcox has said. Then we see the uncle again, and, you know, he's has a finger underneath his mouth, and he has, like, this look on his face. When Angle believed the dreams of Cthulhu became obvious when I read through File 2, he had an account of an earlier date he investigated since 1908. And then we see a professor. Apparently the uncle has taken the statue of Cthulhu to the American Archaeological Society annual meeting 1908. And we see a professor, I guess he has a star on his vest, like the Sneetches from, you know, Dr. Seuss's The Sneetches on the Beaches. Archaeological Society was having a meeting down in Missouri when in walked Legrisse with a stone statuette with questions from experts. Legrisse was beset. And we kind of get the who's here as they're worshipping Cthulhu. None of the members who were there assembled could think of a thing that could be resembled, except for Webb, who was exploring Greenland, but there was a similar idol firsthand. So we kind of see the who's, from Whoville, dancing around and worshiping a Cthulhu statue, and we see this man just looking at them, and It was 1860, and out in the snow, Professor Webb met with some fellow Eskimo. Phonemically, he copied down their mad chanting, and it turned out Lagrassi had been hearing some similar ranting. And of course, we have the professor again, like in Dr. Seuss, trying to explain himself, eyes closed, and he's got, you know, the hand over the heart and the other one stretched out, and Wilcox and associates are just like standing back, like wondering what this guy is talking about. The inspector Lagrassi had uncovered the meaning, and the house had realized that Cthulhu lies dreaming. With these few words, he unhid what was hidden and opened the door to a thing long forbidden. Way down in the swamps of the deep and dark south, a rumor was murmuring by word of mouth that women and children a cult had been stealing. Police then decided truth needed revealing. And we kind of see, like, these Dr. Seuss, like, witches, you know, have the bones in their hair. They kind of look like Sideshow Mel from The Simpsons, and they have taken, like, I guess the sister from Cat in the Hat, got it. My brain just locked up. I forgot her name. But she's tied up to a stick and they're taking her away. So, again, this is pretty cool illustrations right here for a Dr. Seuss. Then we see, like, the Keystone Cops in a way. I know it's 1920s. When 20 men into the dark ventured bravely, no man laughed. No, they all ventured gravely. As tom-toms beat distance in the dark haunted wood, Lagoon Country legend chilled them where they stood. And we kind of see, like, this, not Cthulhu creature, but it's another one with eyes separated and tentacles and teeth emerging from the water. The paths that explorers had refused to take lead them into the swamp and then out by a lake, in which a lifeless and formless and impalpable sight, the devils worship at the stroke of midnight. The offer spotted an ominous glare, still no one had imagined what would be found there. When pushing through branches and into a glade, they encountered twisted madness on parade. And of course we see the worshippers, they not the Who's so much, but there are these red characters off in the distance that are of course chanting, you know, the Cthulhu cult. They found it was too late to save the kidnapped. On seeing the sight, some policemen had snapped. Regaining their senses, they then charged ahead. Some men were arrested, and some were shot dead. When Lagrassi got his captives back into town, some had mentioned great old ones that lived underground. They arrived here on Earth when the stars were just right, falling out of the sky, coming in from the night. And of course, we see, you know, these men dancing along the truffula trees and a hibernating Cthulhu. Most convicts kept silent, kept their secrets their own, for some parts of the faith were for their ears alone. A mestizo named Castro had told them the most of undying Chinese and ancients off the coast, and we see, of course, one of the followers of the straitjacket, you know, looking out of the window at the stars at night. And that's going to be a big thing about the stars aligning to bring back Cthulhu. And then we kind of see, like, a flying Horton, Dr. Seuss-esque Cthulhu, and some other flying Cthulhus. Great Cthulhu had led them from some other place, when the great old ones traveled across outer space. For a time at some humans, they physically screamed, up until we all sank, now they wait there and dream. And then we kind of see, like, this Middle Eastern man with a very long beard, once again very Dr. Seuss-esque. In the Necronomicon, though easily to miss, the mad Arab Al-Azid had referenced this, writing, "This is not the dead which can eternal lie, and with strange aeons, even death may yet lie." And of course, we kind of have, like, the famous Dr. Seuss telescope, where, you know, a guy's looking through it, and after the telescope, we get to see three different eyes. Of the statements from Castro, one should be most feared. When the stars in the night sky have rightly appeared, then the old ones are able to rise once again, but the cultists alone are the ones who knew when. All their insights are secret, so no one understands. They will murder for chaos across distant lands. They'll awaken great old ones with foul, acrane prayers, who then spill from below our sanity tears. And we kind of see the Dr. Seuss human dressed up in Cthulhu garb, and he's at a cave worshipping some sort of unknown deity, where we see a thousand eyes and some tentacles and teeth are emerging with eyeballs, so it's pretty freaky, even for a Dr. Seuss book. Well, Grassy's tale closed not with answers but questions. To keep up the silence was someone's suggestion, and in secret the men there could then correspond. I've convinced myself Angel still might have been conned. Of course, the narrator is just reading the book of the tale Inspector Grassi, and he's kind of wondering if this is true or not. I held on at the time to some feeling of doubt. I still wondered if Wilcox had found out about the professor's strange research and contacts worldwide. After visiting him, I'm sure he had not lied. And we see Wilcox in a room where furniture is starting to turn to like Cthulhu creatures. Although Castro had died shortly after his trial, I managed to stop with Legrassi for a while. With the cultists in Isle, he would still be obsessed. When I saw it, I likewise had become possessed. And we see, you know, two characters looking at, you know, the statue of Cthulhu, and we see the backside, literally, of Cthulhu with his butt crack, so, you know. And we see, of course, narrator again, looking, reading the paper. I imagined that I had received grandeur and fame, revealing religions that had once gone unnamed. But with no little to go on, I put it aside, till a foreign newspaper by chance I espied. The old paper recounted the Emma's travels. She'd run into some storms when from Aquan she sailed. They had met a ship which had ordered them back. When the crew had refused, the alert had attacked, and a Dr. Seuss ship gets sunk by another Dr. Seuss ship. Though the Emma was sunk, still her crew won the battle. Then they sailed into something that just the men had just rattled. Just Johansson returned from the turbulent sea with the idol in hand quite mysteriously. The part of it all the most piqued my attention, and this is to say beyond my comprehension. All the sailors had vanished at the exact time. Young Wilcox's nightmares invaded his mind. So I went to Dunedin and Cindy the Norway, just to meet with Johansson and hear what he had to say. But Johansson's widow met me at the door. But poor Johansson had died just a few months before. And we see that he tried to meet Johansson, and we see that, you know, another Dr. Seuss human wearing, you know, black. So not bad illustrations at all. This is pretty well, definitely a love letter to Seuss in a way. And we kind of see like a Dr. Seuss architecture of Riella, which is awesome. It's very Dr. Seuss-esque, you know, green, and, you know, the architecture of any Dr. Seuss building with a lot of holes going in, of, you know, pipes going in and out. And we see like the teeny little ship in the on the bottom of the water. Then Johnson's widow gave me his diary. It described in English what he had seen at sea. He had then thus spared his wife. I now wish he had spared me. From the tale of his sighting strange geometry, they found an old city come up from the depths, but while they could not know, I knew it was real. Kind of see like the Who's again in a way, or very tiny Dr. Seuss humans. The man tale Johansson got madder again when exploring the city with the Emma's men. There was a stinking Missilla staircase that ran with the steps not designed for a regular man. Still, the crew clamored skyward to find souvenirs, but no trinkets were worth taking, the place appeared. So they climbed even higher through normal and abnormal angles that had twisted their thinking into mental tangles. And we see the men trying to walk around the steps and going insane. And they're going, and then one of them looks like it's starting to form eyes and eyelashes. At the top of their climb, they found a great door that was not for certain in the wall or the floor. At a sailor's light touch, the great portal swung wide, and a tremendous shadow leaked out from inside. When a nasty wet slopping oozed up from below, they experienced something man's not meant to know. Two men had died where they stood as their minds simply broke. 'Twas a merciful fate when, yep, here we go, Cthulhu awoke. And we see, like, again, this gigantic, just the head and a hand, takes up the entire page of Cthulhu, and he's holding three men in his hand. He has, like, the Horton eyes from Horton Hears a Who. We see these men running. This is, again, great illustration. And then we kind of see, like, Cthulhu's head just emerging from the water. Just the head and some tentacles. And he's kind of giving this look like, why'd you bother coming here in the first place? As Cthulhu had paused, but they knew not for what, Sir Johansson and Britton got back to the yacht. That the boiler was boiling, and pleased them indeed. But with limited steam, they would sail at half speed. Brian saw a great Cthulhu slide into the foam, then had broken his mind, and he did not get home. Though Johansson planned to make more steam and then flee, it was clear that Cthulhu would catch them at sea. And then, of course, we get another great image right here where, you know, we could see, like, the point of view of Cthulhu looking out from, you know, Johnson as he's in the captain's, you know, he's in the boiler and he can see Cthulhu out from the window. And we just see, like, Cthulhu's eyes and a tentacle. Brave Johansson then turned the alert right around until Cthulhu, the vessel, was abound. On Cthulhu, great head, it appeared they would ground, but the bow pierced his brow with a horrible sound. And then apparently we see Cthulhu's head being split in half, opening up from side to side in the water. It's kind of disturbing. Though Cthulhu's great head, the alert had then plowed, thus releasing an acrid and sinking green cloud. When Johansson looked back, the foul thing was reforming, but alert seemed away with engines now performing. Then the sailor had drifted till Vigin called. His adventure there ended, for now that was all. Very disturbing imagery, seeing like little lines coming out of Cthulhu's head. The ship Vigilant sailed past where Alois should be, but the city had sunk back beneath the deep sea. And I guess that Cthulhu lies waiting there still, his existence maintained by the strength of his will. For Johansson, death ended his mad misery, and I know, just like Angel, it'll soon come for me. I've discovered too much of what man should not know, and the cultists are out somewhere spreading woe. I've uncovered the truth of the strange bass relief and Johansson's account of things beyond belief. Now I'm packing up all these things in a box, the small box that which Angel's that closes and locks. If you value life, you'll leave it all there, and with all my papers, please exercise care. All these terrible truths, I beg you, please do not share, for those cosmic horrors, I psychs can't. And then, of course, the end page, we kind of have, you know, the captain again with the hook hand, like, you know, the Grinch. And that's pretty much the call of Cthulhu, the Dr. Seuss, or at least from DeviantArt, the Dr. Seuss version, which is pretty much awesome sauce, if I do say so myself. So if you could find the website or purchase a hard copy of this book, please do. As much as it drives me mad, brilliant artwork. It looks like something from Dr. Seuss. It's written like something from Dr. Seuss. So I definitely give the Call of Cthulhu Dr. Seuss version for beginners a solid 5 out of 5. I wish there was an audiobook version of it. But we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back right after this.
Great coffee.
Hey. Chad, who's that strange, somber man on the cover of that book you're reading?
Oh, that's H.P. Lovecraft.
Oh, I've heard of him, but I never really got into his stuff. It's kind of strange and hard to read.
No, I used to think that too, but that all changed when I started listening to the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast.
What's that?
The H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast is a weekly podcast.
Tell me more.
Well, these two really smart and hilarious guys give a synopsis of the story, then they talk about its background, the critical views, and what it says about the author.
Well, where can I listen? Well,
let me tell you, Chris, you can go to hppodcraft.com or, heck, just subscribe through iTunes. It's that easy.
Oh, Chad, I'm so excited. Now I can listen to this podcast and pretend to all my snooty friends that I actually read and understand H.P. Lovecraft.
Hey, that's what I do. Oh, dear.
Yeah! HPPodcraft.com.
Pixels in the Animation is the Geekcast Radio Network's video game cartoon review show. We are covering every episode of 9 different video game cartoons. Join TV's Mr. Neil and myself, TFG and Mike, as we trek through multiple Mario tunes, Zelda, Captain N, Mega Man, Sonic, and we are also driving through Donkey Kong Country. Pixels in the Animation is 100 episodes of video game cartoon goodness, so tune in to help us find the Pixels in the Animation, which you can find every Wednesday on iTunes and www.geekcastradio.com.
So that'll pretty much close out my thoughts and opinions and of the deity Cthulhu. Now, I know I should have reviewed the short story, but I thought, you know, every podcaster, I'm sure, has dissected and reviewed the original short story to death and talked about it. I thought it was just a little bit more fun to discuss this Dr. Seuss book, or this Dr. Seuss fan fiction, you know, book that I had come across. It seemed like a more interesting idea tonight than anything, trying to do something a little bit different for the DT. And I have to admit, if you can, as I said, if you can purchase the a hardcover version. I'm sure there's got to be a hardcover version of this somewhere out there for the Call of Cthulhu for Beginner Readers by DeviantArt. Please let me know. But if not, you can go to Google it. It's called, as I said, Call of Cthulhu for Beginner Readers. It says by H.B. Lovecraft, but it was created by Dr. Faustino A.U., and it's from DeviantArt, so wouldn't be too hard to find. I'll definitely put the links in the show notes. So, until then, please check us out at geekcastradio.com, and you can find many great shows, Talking in Circles, Alter Geek Unlimited, Pixels in the Animation, as I said, syndicated shows, Turtle Flakes, Doctor Whoiverse. Geekcastradio.com has a number of great shows, and they're also put together a $1,000 donation drive, so please check them out as well. And please check out all the other podcasts that are non-Geekcast Radio related that I subscribe to. Arkham Sessions, Books and Nachos, Now Playing, Disney Film Project, Turtle Flakes, Real Ghost Stories Online, Anything Ghost, and many, many more. And please check out my written reviews over at GeekCastRadio.com, where I've been reviewing Gotham, as well as The Walking Dead Season 5. I've also reviewed the Harley Quinn comics, all written blogs, of course. And I'll start to review more of the Squirrel Girl comics, some Image comics, and of course the brand new Howard the Duck comic. And next week, I'm going to be interviewing, I want to make sure I get his name right as well, Jason Ubluth, who has written an interesting graphic novel called Weapon Brown. It pretty much has Charlie Brown and post-apocalypse trying to save the little redhead girl. And it's has some of the most interesting imagery of comic book strip characters of yesteryear and the apocalypse, including Garfield being all mutated. So I'll be interviewing him, talking about the graphic novel, and also I'll be posting my written review of that book next week as well. So until then, take care and let the madness consume you. Good night.
Ryan,
BP Oil Company today drilled into the moon and appears to have caused even greater problems.
Yep, that's him. So long, Justin Bieber, you little douchebag.
Far away, flying through gates of madness and into your heart.
Yeah, follow you.
Turning dreams into nightmares, destroying all he sees. Now begins a new adventure for me. You and the Dark One, Cthulhu, sharing adventures and smiles. It's a magical bond to have. Can share. Soon the whole world will be made aware of you and the death of Cthulhu.